Hello there and welcome to the No Script Show. This is part of our series looking at components that make up a website. And today we're talking about forms. Forms turn the web from a passive medium into something dynamic and interactive. Without forms, users can't search, comment, access private content, or shop online. As it is such a huge topic and the aim of this show is to keep things simple, we're going to start with an overview. When we might need forms and what services are available to help us. For static sites like ours, the No Script Show, we certainly need additional services to add forms, but this episode should also be as relevant to those on dynamic platforms like WordPress. As always, if you head to our website, you'll be able to find the show notes. This time, they're at noscript.show/25. And just a quick message, if you like what we do over here, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. My understanding is that if you do that, you'll be notified by YouTube when we create content, and that will help us out no end. So like and subscribe, they say, David. I understand. Okay, so over to you.
Yeah. Well, I've had some trouble trying to put together something on forms because it's just such a huge topic,
yeah,
as you mentioned. And so I decided this overview might be a good thing because, well, a couple of things, I guess, happened with me. One is that, you know, I've been moving towards static sites and our own site is static. So if we want anything dynamic with a server, then we have to employ a service for that. And we have got a contact form which needs fixing on our site. But also I've had clients as well who I've put onto static sites who need to then manage some more complex forms. So right. I needed to start. And my assumption was, I know there's been a big, huge move. I mean, I think it was the Web Almanac for last year, 2024, that said that in the top, I think it was 10,000 sites, there's been a 67% increase in the number of static and hybrid sites.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So when I was first sort of moving that direction, when I looked around, maybe it's just me bad at searching, there wasn't much available in terms of form solutions now. And of course, looking now, and I think this has been reflected, seems to be so many of them around in different forms. So I thought we'd look at those. And what other thing did I want to mention? I should say, I think we'll break this up. So we'll talk about this, but in a later episode, I think we'll need to do a video bit of content where we'll look at some of the form solutions because we'll need to explore how they look and how they behave.
Yeah.
And then we've got other things that we'll need to do as well for the show, which is at some point, I think it's its own topic, is to look at search, search options for static, and also look at commenting systems.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, it kind of, it's freaky when you think about it that essentially there's no interactivity on the web without forms, basically. I know that with things like JavaScript, we can move things around and what have you, but anything where you want to submit something, so that isn't just limited to the typical use of content forms, but, you know, every time you go put something on, I don't know, Blue Sky or Mastodon or X or Facebook or whatever it may be, you're basically interacting with a bunch of forms. It feels like half the web became forms when social media came along. You wanted to communicate with other people, and the only way to do that was with forms. So very important, not just for contact forms, but the wider web as well. Shall I pop the show notes onto the screen?
Yeah, that would be lovely. Also, because I'm going all white as well.
Yes, it's very sunny where you are. You've definitely been illuminated. Fear not, you're only a small circle on the screen now, so it's not so important.
Okay, so yes, show notes. Let me just get my mouse over them here. So I thought we'd just start by talking a little bit about kind of when it comes to forms, expectations, and clients. That sort of is my title here, because we're in an era where, you know, so all no code products have been heavily marketed. So certainly my experience is that the clients that I now get, they think that getting any kind of interactivity is a pretty easy thing, something that they'll be able to manage themselves. And it doesn't always prove to be that way. And a lot of clients that I've had have actually come to me for literally a form, really. A couple of people have come just for a booking thing. You know, they've seen that they've had rooms that they've got for hire as part of their practice or something, and they want to hire them out. And that's the main reason they've come to me, is because they want someone to make this form magic happen.
Okay.
So I don't know how much you've experienced this, but that my feeling is that there's a real sense that with a lot of clients who are not that familiar with the web, is that they see our forms out there, and they think it's a case of build it and they will come.
Oh,
in other ways, so the form, just having a form up there for bookings, then bookings will come because it's there.
This is so what my experience was back in the day when I was doing client websites. It was that exactly that you put on a form and the expectation would be that it would arrive, and often you'd get into conversations about, you know, the deluge of things and how they would manage it, and in the end you kind of just had to sort of silently and in some circuitous way say, I wouldn't worry too much, it's highly unlikely that it's going to be, you know, hammering your inbox all the time. Then again, you know, you never know. If you suddenly go viral somewhere on the web, maybe the form will become the thing that brings your site to its knees, who knows. But this whole thing of build it and they will come. Mm-hmm. Maybe, but
yeah. One client who I really like, but it's taken me so long to convince her, because she says, you know, a competitor down the road is doing so well from their bookings form, but I said,
okay,
but it wasn't that. It's because they put so much extra work into making themselves visible, ground advertising.
The reason the form is getting filled is because of all the other things that person is doing, which obviously don't know. Having said that, I'm working with a friend of mine on a WordPress product at the moment, and we've made extensive use of a WordPress form solution for the support which we anticipate, and it's not really a case of build it and they will come. In our case, we're trying to work out ways to prevent people filling in the form unnecessarily, if you know what I mean. So we're putting these different roadblocks in to sort of say, have you tried this, can you try this, blah blah blah. I don't know how successful that will be, but certainly we're trying different ways on the assumption that we really don't want people filling out the form too often, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Then another thing that I think some clients think is that, you know, if they do have a sort of solution for forms, that they'll just be able to manage it, you know, it'll just kind of take care of itself. And because I'm doing the static side, and I now really, I think it's quite important for me to sort of give the dynamic stuff over to the client so they can control that, so I can separate what I've built for them against, mm-hmm. you know, other services. But there's a real, I mean, the same client who wanted the booking forms, it's become very clear over finding lots and lots of solutions for her that she wouldn't be able to manage it anyway. She just hates computers. She's just not, uh-huh. she wouldn't be able to manage to do the things, to change the appointments as needed or to cancel or to get back, just to run it. So, it was a good thing that we never built it and spent all this money, because I don't think there was a solution out there. So
I think it's this beguiling idea that you can kind of offload stuff to the internet and the internet will kind of magically do these things. So I don't know, in the case of booking, the idea would be that, well, everybody's on their phones all the time, so if I put a booking form up there, my calendar will suddenly become full. Well, they've got to find the page to start with, and then the form's got to be not that confusing. And honestly, I am more and more getting to just give me the phone number, and we'll get into that in a bit. But if I can find the phone number and talk to a human being, I will try to miss out forms as much as possible, just because I know that I've then spoken to a person and that thing has been dealt with. And, you know, I've booked the thing at 4 p.m. on Friday, and now everybody knows that's happening and it's guaranteed. Whereas with the, the online bit, I'm a little bit more, I've been let down by people misunderstanding how their own technology works, let's put it that way.
Yeah. And there's another client as well that, I mean, that's what came up recently. I was looking for something where they can manage it, because I've allowed them to use one of my accounts that I've got for a form. And this form they've got events and people need to pick an event and then pay for that, which goes through to Stripe. And I'm using one of the solutions, which we'll talk about later. But what I realized is that I let them use my account to do that and they had access to it. But actually, it really confused them anyway, because it's got these conditional logics in it.
Yeah,
so it's not that easy for them to work out. So I still had to go in and sort that out. So
figure it all out for them. Yeah, they can get very, very complicated very, very quickly. So what on the front end might appear really obvious, you know, you've ticked a box and then a bunch more fields become visible. The logic behind that can get infuriating pretty quickly.
I've just listed a few things which would be typical for this show to mention, but what clients are less likely to think about is kind of UX and accessibility of the forms that they're going to use, whether they're responsive to today's devices, where it needs to be fully responsive, really, isn't it? We can't just go to standard sizes. The impact that the form solution has on page load and in turn SEO, and you know, the potential cost of support and maintenance for the forms that they might want on their site. So I think that is generally not considered when a client comes. And I think...
And maybe the subscription model as well, you know, they've got to pay the thing of that, you know, for having a plan on whatever service that is as well. You've done a lot of work with AI, I think, to draw out some of that, which we'll get to later.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, certainly I did that. When you've got a client in the early days and that you're just kind of keen to give them what they ask for, so you'll rush off straight away to get something that, you know, we can't build because we're not, you know, back and front end developers who can do everything. So we go and look for a solution. And then often without probing enough, it's very easy, I think, to end up providing a solution that the client really can't manage themselves and haven't really thought about and may not be needed in the first place. You know, that's what's happened with the people who came to me for bookings. They've actually never had a bookings. That's what they came to me for. And they've been talked out of it because what they needed more than anything was somebody to come to a website they owned. You know,
right. That was the first hurdle. Get the book. Yeah. The booking, the booking form will not be viewed by anybody. So it's kind of pointless. But there is this sort of beguiling nature. It's the whole build it and they will come thing as well in overcomplicating what you've got. Yeah. You know, so as the purveyor, I don't know, let's say that you've got a hairdresser's or something like that. You provide 50 different options and you want to know exactly what they want, what time they want to come and rah, 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 rah. And before you know it, the form takes 10 minutes to fill out. And actually all you needed was date, time and your name. And that's it. You know, that's really all that you needed. But you overcomplicate it because you can. Okay. Do all websites need a form? Is that where you're going to now?
Yes, I think so. Because this is an ongoing debate, because I think you see it somewhere, maybe on Reddit, every year, I think you say, do you still need forms on your basically small business sites, these sort of brochure sites, as people say, in 2003, 2004, 2005, it keeps going on, the debate. And so I thought we'd just, I've summarized basically what I've seen in all of these debates.
Can I just interrupt you there? Sorry, because what you're about to say, if it's true, I never knew any of this. And it's so interesting because my answer to that question would invariably be, yes, it can't hurt. You know, you might as well have a contact form. But what you've discovered here, if it's true, and let's hope it is, that I'm so wrong. I was so wrong about that. So sorry, I'm interrupting, but I just thought it was an important metric. Keep watching.
No, I think that's interesting. I would have said the same, but now I question it a lot more. Well, one reason I question it is because, you know, I'm keen to promote the indie web, the fact that people can just manage their own HTML and CSS and keep it as simple as possible. And as soon as you get into forms, then in some form or another, they're onto dynamic servers, and that makes the whole thing more complex. Mm-hmm. So if you could just use third parties and avoid the form, then that's great. And also, forms are one of the things that I've been doing, which we'll talk about later, is I've been really genning up on how to make a good form. I've been reading a book by Adam Silver, as well as some other people on accessibility. And forms get really complex to do them right, you know? So can we avoid them altogether? So, yeah, the debates are going on. I suppose it's no different from, is SEO dead in whichever year? You know, it's the same sort of thing. But I'm thinking about just the contact forms with this, really, on the sort of personal and small business sites. That might be the only dynamic thing they need on the site if you put a form, and do they actually need it? So the people for adding a form will generally say it avoids the spam of a public email. It lets you collect structured and required information. You can route messages to multiple or specific recipients automatically. It makes it easy to automate leads to CRM or databases or whatever you use there. Standard subject lines is something that you can control with that one, making inquiries easier to manage. It keeps the user on the site rather than open a email client or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can log and analyze the submissions for tracking and insights. So that's the fours.
And they all make perfect sense, right? None of that is weird. And I think I would have said all of those things without thinking about any of this stuff, which is about to come. Yeah. And especially the additional points. So anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no. I'll do the agates list that I've got here. Forms can still attract spam anyway, so you need a proper capture. So you've got another third party in there or some form of filtering. So that's another service you rely on. Mm-hmm. Users may find forms restrictive compared to writing a direct email. So they might not want to just follow that message, but they might, I don't know, they might want to add more than your form allows. Accessibility might suffer if the form's not properly coded, which in most cases it's not. Misconfigured forms may fail to deliver messages. It requires technical setup and ongoing maintenance with these things, of course. And, you know, even with the services I've had, we've had flaws. So you introduce that. There's a risk of poor design creating a confusing or frustrating user experience. Server or plugin vulnerabilities could open up security risks. Meeting GDPR requirements is more complex if you've got form, because you have to highlight what's going mm-hmm. for that way. Mm-hmm. And also, if you make your forms too long or intrusive, visitors may abandon them. And I got some extra points to try and sort of balance these out.
Oh, this is the fascinating bit. This is the bit that I just didn't know, and I'm so curious about this. Go on.
Yes. Well, I think everything here I say has got to be taken with a pinch of salt, because some of it has been generated by Perplexity AI and amalgamated some of these statistics. So bear that in mind.
Let's just put all of that to one side and assume that AI never hallucinates about people and all of this is true. I'm sure there's a kernel of truth in every one bit of this. So, okay. Carry on.
Okay. So, I mean, there's definitely the case that many UX experts, and I've actually put a link to the Norman Nielsen group or the Neil Nielsen Norman group. We never remember, do we? But anyway, when they're talking about the email being a key trust factor. So one of those four was the fact that you can obscure your email address and just use a form so you don't get that spam. But to be honest, if you do that, it's quite a key trust factor. People want to see an email address anyway. So that's gone for one of the four. And then there's some, this amalgamation from Perplexity of the studies. So and I've seen this in a few places actually, that the forms themselves, and of course it depends what the situation is, but the form itself only converts at about 3-5% in these sort of surveys that's shown, which is not very high, is it? And when you look at clickable emails and phone numbers, they can be converting up to 38%. Of course, context is all important with this, but website chat, I think a lot of these studies are presented by people who have a product.
A website chat widget to sell. Yeah.
Yes, but they come from something like 33-50%. And then also WhatsApp, and I think, you know, there's obviously people who want to promote that, those message links that you can get where you can click open to chat through that, they can achieve rates of somewhere between 45-60%. That seems very extreme, and I'm not sure if I believe that. But it's just interesting when you look at it, when you get, I asked it in a few different questions actually for AI, and I got something very similar, which really put the form, the contact form, much lower than all these other methods of contact. So do we need it? And there was a few other things that I found out as well, from a few different places, that phone numbers field can drop submissions. So if you're adding that one, even if it's optional, just someone seeing, particularly the youth, as we were talking about earlier, if they see a phone number being required or looks like one's been asked for, that will put them off.
So interesting. Anyway, sorry, you finish the bullet points and then we'll...
Oh yeah, there's only one more, which is just there was no research. I was looking for research to see whether I thought disabled users for accessibility, whether they would generally prefer to click on an email with a familiar system that they use or over a form. And of course, obviously a non-accessible form, the email is going to be better for them. But there's no real research into which people prefer. There's just generally a lot of people may prefer what they're familiar with, so they would probably go for the email clickable link rather than the form.
There's so much interesting stuff in that. So I'm just going to parse it in the way that I see. So first of all, that the, I mean, again, let's just assume it's true. If it's wildly inaccurate, apologies, but the low conversion of forms, somewhere mm-hmm. in the region of 5%, let's go with that, is amazingly low. You know, if you present that 20 times, one person will fill it out, or less in this case. So that's remarkable. But also the clickable email and phone number converting somewhere in the region of 35-40%. That's also kind of curious. But that really does jive with me, because if I see the phone number And okay, so first of all, let's assume it's like some local business. I'm going to ring that 100 times out of 100. I'm not going to fill out the form. If it's possible for me to speak with that person, I've decided years ago that that's the best way to conduct almost any negotiation is to speak to the person. So I don't know, if it's a plumber, I just want to know, when are you coming? Let's get it all sorted out. I'll talk to you. We'll establish trust. You can figure out who I am and I'll tell you where I live and I'll get all of the details out. And it's because of that conversation. It's because something surprising will inevitably come up. And I want to know that I've given all the detail and all of its fine, gory detail, whatever that may be. And I've also decided, you know, that I can get across in 1 minute, probably what it would take me 20 minutes to write out in an email. So that whole phone number thing is brilliant. Second, email. Yeah, I'm all about that as well, because it's this, I can put all of it down. I'm not constrained to a field. Like you've got to say all the thing, you know, you've got to list the things here. What's the reason and what have you? Well, I just want to explain the reason in this one big email text box area, if you like. And so that works for me. I'm not so sure. In my case, this statistic about WhatsApp and website chat, that doesn't ring true for me. But obviously, you know, the why I try not to use those things if possible. If they're there, I will use them. Not if it's a bot. As soon as I get the notion that it's a bot, my first thing is, can I speak to a human? I just type that in and see what happens. So those kind of don't work for me. But that's the one about the, if you just put a form field asking for a phone number, that it drops submissions. That's so curious to me, because I can get that as well. I don't want to give my phone number up as a part of this exchange. And I don't know if you do the same thing. I often put an incorrect phone number in. If it's required, I'll just make up some random phone number, which satisfies the length of digits. But I don't want to give some random person my phone number because I don't know where that's going to end up. Yes. And then obviously the bit about disabled users and what have you at the end. So all of that to me is basically extraordinarily fascinating. And the whole chat bot thing and the clickable email and phone, I hadn't given that any thought at all. But it would definitely skew my advice to somebody going forward, depending on their need. You know, if it was a local business website, I think that's telling me promote the phone number more or less above almost anything else.
Yeah, it's interesting because context is going to be important, how these are designed. I do believe the low number on the contact forms because of the fact that I've seen roughly with some statistics how many people have gone to a contact form but not filled that in. So that doesn't surprise me that it's so low, because they've gone to that page a lot but very few submissions come from it. So but the other numbers, which are saying how high, the high numbers are the ones that I don't trust so much.
So interestingly as well, I think the device that you're visiting that page on will really be critical. So I'm far more likely to fill out a form if I'm sat with a keyboard on the phone, because of the pain of, you know, typing anything into a form field on a phone. That probably, you know, it's probably part of it. And as more and more of us are viewing more and more of the web online with a mobile device in our hand, that probably skews us away from it. I do wonder if form fields had an audio option where you could, you know, click a button, record some audio and send that along. I wonder how that would work. Never really thought about that.
You can do that. Anyway, most of this, it was just me thinking, do I need to put a form on everybody's site? And I will just mention just on the WhatsApp, which I hadn't really thought about before, but because people are so used to that as a way of contact and a way of being able to share imagery, it's very useful for where I put it on an electrician's site on that, because, you know, what he's saying is that people often want to show him a picture of what needs fixing.
So I have done this. So I have I use a plumber and we've known each other for many years now, but that is the modus operandi that he has. And so I'll explain that something is broken and it needs to be replaced. And so the immediate thing is, can you show me a photo of the bit that's broken? And that must make his life immeasurably more straightforward, because immediately he's captured, okay, I know what that job involves now. Whereas before, he'd have to show up, then probably go and get the part that demonstrated was needed. So there's like two journeys there, whereas the photography bit there probably cuts that out. So yeah, that's really interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah. It's just made me think a little bit about where I think I've come to the conclusion that, and interesting enough, I mean, I was talking to Paul Lacey, who's been a guest on the show and is a good friend of ours. And at the moment, he's doing some designs for the page builder that he does some occasional work for. He's doing some pages. And I looked at his contact page and I thought, oh, they were quite well thought out. He's got different ones. And that contact page is as the Nielsen-Norman group or Norman-Nielsen group
one day.
Say about contact pages, it should have all the sort of things that you might need if you're going to make contact in any form. So, you know, parking and where they are on the map and all that needs to be included. But on his and that, he made very clear his telephone numbers, a sort of box that was very clear on what needed to know about telephone and what you needed to know about the email. And then the contact form followed later. And I thought that layout, just the design of it seemed to be perfect for this. So I put it, but I think, you know, you could easily skip the contact form on some sites and not. I asked the AI in various forms the question, do you think given these bits of information here, whether, you know, a contact form would lose, not having a contact form would lose you any business. And they generally came out to the fact that they didn't think it would make much difference. And in fact, you know, another argument would be that you can overload people with too many options and then lose people that way.
Yeah, and also it means that you've got to man several options, haven't you? So if you present a phone number and an email address and a contact form and, I don't know, WhatsApp as well, there's four places where you've got to be visible. Whereas if you put it down, I guess the contact form provides convenience, especially on the side of the business that's got the website, because they just have to man that inbox, don't they? They just have to keep an eye on that form. And the kind of data that they're going to get is predictable. So it's definitely got its benefits. But I always went with the options on the contact us page. I would always list out phone number, address and things like that. But I didn't apply the amount of thought that Paul obviously has done in this scenario, but that's interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of laid out in a way where it's not just a bit of text, which you'll skip over and then see the big form, which is the eye most. It's actually made the telephone and the email catch your eye more than the form. The form's secondary. And I thought that's probably how I'll do it with most of my type of clients. I mean, obviously, with some people, they need... there are circumstances with people where they do need to collect that into a system, you know, Google Sheets or something. So a form is needed. Okay. So let's assume we need a form of some kind.
Yeah. Let's assume that, shall we? Okay.
Our form options. So I put some stuff here because I needed to get this straight in my own head. So, I mean, let's start with some sort of basic facts that in order to be able to send some data via a form on our website safely, we do need a client and a server side working. We need that sort of dynamic server on there. So I'll might as well read the notes out. So the client side is, for anyone who's not familiar with that, is the kind of HTML that the user interacts with. And we can think of this, I like this analogy, I somebody else gave me this one, that we can think of that as the sort of bouncer on the front door of a nightclub. It's doing the basic it does the basic checks. And if we're creating our own forms, then it's up to us to make sure that people know when they've made a mistake before they click the submit. So we're out there doing those sort of safety checks, but they're just sort of basic ones. And then the server side kind of acts as the security in the club, guarding the VIP service. So it's going to check whether the data is safe to send onto your email and whether it stops, you know, some of the riffraff getting into that special area. So that's the spam, you know, that's we need to connect the anti-spam. We need to connect that to some sort of server in between.
Right.
So I like the analogy. The most interesting thing for me, though, is what I've kind of learned, and we'll talk about this in another episode, is that even though HTML form validation comes built in, it's probably not good enough to say it's fully accessible for everybody. It's not going to read out without using ARIA and JavaScript. It's not going to tell somebody necessarily when they've done it in real time or point them where they need to go if they need to, you know, correct an email address or something. So
do you know if that's an endeavor of, let's say, browser manufacturers to make the server side stuff?
Well, you know, we didn't get it until HTML5, although that's very old now. We didn't have that and we needed JavaScript. So, you know, there has been that move, but I don't see there's much that's changed to alter and make forms easier. Basic contact forms, I think, because the majority of people only need that. And just, I think, because I think it will correct you automatically if you do nothing with the HTML. It will correct you to say you haven't put an at sign in your email, but I don't think it pulls you out if you've left the dot out from, you know, .com or whatever your email address is. I don't think it will call you out. So it does allow you to. Anyway, it's for another time.
But yeah, I think when we get into, sorry, derailed.
So, yeah, so our options are, firstly, is to either DIY the server and the client side. So we write the front-end code and the back-end code. But we're not going to do this because this is really going to mean that we have to host this back-end server. So we can do that either, you know, with serverless cloud functions we have these days. We have more choices. We could do it with static hosts plus their own back-end APIs. We could do it with email to form submissions via mail server, or we can use some of these new open source server softwares to be able to manage this stuff. But that's way beyond me, certainly. I think it is for you, Nate.
Yeah.
I think you're better at this kind of stuff than I would be. But anyway, I'm not touching that. The next option then is to go where we've gone with our show, because we have got a contact form. It's not very good. That's on our site. And that's using the next option, which is DIY the client side. So I've put the HTML in there and we use a third party for the server side. And if that's the route that we want to go with this one, then there's a load of services, which for those who are listening to this won't be able to see. But if you go to our show notes, you'll see there's a big table here with basically ones that fit into that category. So both you and I, Nathan, we bought, didn't we, FormSpark, and that's the one I've been using.
Yeah, so this is a, it doesn't do any building of the form. You have to build the form yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to either write the HTML with the form fields and the submit button and whatnot, and then you connect the submit event to their, I can't remember how it works. You basically copy and paste some endpoint, don't you? And that data then gets sent to FormSpark. It worked pretty well. I mean, it did everything. Obviously, it's not sanitizing things, it's not checking for errors and what have you. But the submissions, once the endpoint had received it, did what it said it would do, which would be forward it on. But it was technical, not tremendously technical, but there was a little bit of a learning curve. I certainly wouldn't have thought a client would like to be involved in any of this process.
Yeah.
Definitely the sort of developer's job. But it works. It was fine and it was cheapest chips. Yeah. Still going, I guess, because I've stopped using it.
Yes, it's still going. Yep. I mean, from personal experience, you're not going to get much support from that. I mean, this is a one-off. It gives you 50,000 lifetime submissions for this fee of $25, and that just lasts as long as it needs to last. And on my deal that we got, the same as you, I think, where it keeps adding each month because it was a slightly different deal which we got there. So I'm never going to run out of forms there. My only beef with that particular thing is that once I contacted them for the support and never got an answer, the second time I did it, I did get an answer, but they never resolved it. And that was the fact that in India, on my IP address, which is actually, you know, the state broadband service, I couldn't submit. It wouldn't go to them. It failed. And it's constantly failed. They had to put a VPN on to make it work. Now, I'm not worried about that because I don't think the couple of clients who are using that at the moment are going to lose anybody but we could be because...
Yeah, that's not a great thing though, is it?
And it's no.
If the support, because obviously they're obviously doing an IP, they've obviously got some IP blocking somewhere in there and who knows?
Yeah, and I think they bounce off other people's services as well, don't they, to send these things. So, you know, I don't know what that was about, but otherwise it's worked pretty perfectly for me. But the rest of them are all the same. I mean, there's one called Basin. I think the well-known one, I'll just skip down the chart, was FormSpree. I think it was one of the earlier ones meeting that new demand for static sites. And
50 submissions a month on FormSpree for free, and then you're onto their paid tier.
Yeah. To be honest, there's nothing. I mean, I won't list them all. Well, maybe I should. Should I list them all out?
Shall I just read them all out loud? So you've got FormSpark, Basin. There's a common pattern here, by the way. They all have ingeniously titled names. FormSpark, Basin, FormBold, FormBackend, FormZillion, Web3Forms, FormSpree, FormCarry, and FormK. keep. If I was in the SAO business, I think there'd be some conversation to be had here. But there's loads of them. And yes. I bet there's loads that you didn't find because they didn't start with the word form.
I know there were some that I've missed off on this. So they've all offered these sort of like free limits, 50, 50, 50. There's one form zillion offering 100, form bold offering 100 for the free. So, and given that you get 100 if you use something like Netlify, which we can use as well, you get 100 with that. They're not really offering much other than the fact that you may want some of the individual services that they offer on the back end, the way that they might connect up to other things like maybe directly to Google Docs or something, if you want, or spreadsheets. But they all behave differently. And I think most of these are exactly the same thing. You write your HTML, you put this one line saying to submit to this address that you've got, and that's what it does. So that's them pretty much. And then the one that's interesting to me is the third one, which is really the form builders we're talking about, where we get third parties to do both the client and the server side of
things. So this is much more SaaS service, login, set up your form.
Yeah, they make your form
code into a website and you're done.
Yeah. And this is where I was blown away with what choices are. And I know I haven't included every one that I came across here. And certainly AI struggled to find all the ones. So obviously this is hugely competitive. The ones that I thought about on our list of these is...
Shall I just read them into the record again?
Oh, yeah, read them.
So we've got paper form, fill out, jot form, cognito forms, type form. You're going to have to scroll it. There you go. Thank you. Formister, uform, form NX. Well, that's a nice title. Servicate, tally, ADA form, and form smart. I've never used any... Oh, no, I have. I've used paper form, the one at the top, but the others I don't believe I've ever used.
Yeah, and you mentioning to me that you'd use Wufoo from...
Wufoo, whatever, W-U-F-O-O, back in the day. Yeah, that was one I tried out when this whole thing was brand new. This allowed you to do all sorts. It was clever. It was a really innovative product, but now I think all of the products have got all of the features that they have. And I also actually downloaded a few... paid for scripts which did things like Wufoo. So I downloaded a whole bunch of things which mimicked what these do, but it was self-hosted, and in some cases it was open source. There was one called Macform, M-A-C-H-F-O-R-M. I don't know what it's called now, but yeah, there was that as well. So what are you using? Are you using one of these on our website then?
No, I'm not, because we've only got our one contact form.
Oh, of course. So sorry, you've already said you were using the form smart thing.
Yeah. I have for a client, I've been using the paper form because that's the deal I've got on that. And it works well. But in fact, on my list here, because I set AI on the task of trying to find out what was what was accessible. That was a key thing for me. And what we could get for free and whether they could connect up to Stripe for free.
Okay.
On there, because that's what a client particularly needed at the moment, who I'd put on paper form. Now, the problem is that with the deal that I got, it's my account. And up to that point, I could give him, because I'm not using it for any other site other than this client, because it was there. And they've now put a security check. So every time you try and log in, then it sends an email to my address.
That renders that whole thing obsolete.
Yeah, exactly. So we're looking for other solutions. And that's really what set me off on this one.
Overcome that problem in the past by setting up a filter in my email client, which then forwards the email to them. But it's a real kludge. It's not ideal.
I thought that very thought, and I thought, no, let's have a look, because I had a bit of an issue anyway. I put it on their own domain because it's a heavy load, and that was another thing that's not on my chart. If you're looking at our show notes, it's all there. I haven't included it because I think we'll do an episode where we'll come back and we'll look at all these when I've tested them all out and see, you know, what my preference is. I've already got a preference so far, but I haven't tested them all out and spent some time. Because one thing that's quite interesting to me is now I've signed up for the free accounts for a whole bunch of these. Who's filling up my email box with all sorts of, you know.
It's free, but not free of spam.
No. And, you know, so Jotform, which looks really good because it's fully accessible and it does a really good job, actually. It's beautiful, actually, how it works on their forms, because if you've made a mistake, it comes up with this big red thing on the top, but it also announces to somebody using the screen reader that they've made an error and where to go to and where to skip to and all that. It's really good.
Oh, so it's good, yeah.
Yeah, and they've got a free amount. You can, but very limited for Stripe payments. You can only get 10 for free, but there's no extra charge on that one. And you've got 100 per month for them. So they look really, really good, but I'm totally put off by the fact that they have just every day sent me some sort of email.
Right, trying okay. to get,
you know, so
you are the product, David. You are the
product. Yes, yes. And the same thing, I mean, I'll just quickly mention as well Uform, which I didn't really like. I have tested it out. I like the way that it's designed and the fact that it takes one question at a time and it'll move to the next screen and stuff. All that's beautiful, but totally inaccessible on that one. I tried it with a screen reader. Just you don't know where you're going at all. So that's out of the question.
They call those conversational forms, don't they?
Yes.
One question
yes.
and then you slide to the next. And to me, it's nothing like a conversation. But anyway, there you go. That's
yeah. Cool. Well, we'll touch on it. I think having that ability to do that is a great thing. And many of them do that. And I think, as I say, I'm reading this book by Adam Silva, and he's very keen on the fact that it's very good for usability.
It does kind of lock you into the one question at a time thing.
Yeah.
But the bit that I don't like about it is that it kind of disguises how much of the form is still to come, if you know what I mean. So you might embark on a form and 4 minutes in, you're like, I've no idea.
Exactly. If you know the stages and where you're going on this, and that's but then you don't know at the next when you go to the next slide, effectively with these things, how many entries. So you might think you're 90% there, and then the last one's gone.
Well, they get over the problem with things like a progress bar or something.
Yeah,
you know, bound to the top of the screen. But I'd still just rather see a form, the whole thing, and work it out for myself. Yeah.
Anyway, paper forms. It's it's easy to set up. It's logical. It's got lots of options there if you are, but there's no free option on this one. But it wasn't accessible, and they don't even mention anything about accessibility. And it was still, although it's got a lot lighter, it was still heavy on the load. So okay. I put it on their domain for his site because I didn't want it ruining the Core Web Vitals, which were all pretty much close to 100, you know, across the board. And you only need one page that's listed on your site that's out, and that can throw your whole fail, can't it? So we put it on its own place there. But yeah, we'll come back on this one because not much to say other than the fact that you do get some more generous offers. And I think the one that I particularly like at the moment is Tally.so is there.
Okay, this is new to me. I've not come across this, but very nice looking website. They've done a great job with that. What was it that you liked so much?
I like them. I like the way that they talk, their blog, what they're talking about. They went out on purpose to do it because things like these things, to get some of the things that you might need, gets very expensive. You know, you're on $25 per month to sort of get something free. As soon as you overstep it, then it gets really expensive. And they've gone out to not do that, to make it as free as possible. And they've been very open and transparent in the blogs that I've seen about how they're making money on it. So it's unlimited for everything here, but you don't get some other things that you might want, like remove the branding, of course. And also, if you want to be able to style these forms with your own CSS, then you're limited on these kind of things. But they say they only need, they've been running basically on 2% of the people who are their customers are paying for the pro version, and that's enough for them to run their small business. And I like them because they're based in the EU. They're very open. They're very much committed to sort of a small group and bootstrapping rather than using venture capital, which I think, you know, that's appeals to me anyway.
Kind of aligns with your fibers, shall we say, your moral fibers. Okay.
Yes. And I missed it, completely missed it. I only caught it because I watched a YouTube video by Adam Silver, and, he's become a bit of an expert because he's advising people like gov.uk and BBC and people like that on this. And the fact that obviously, he builds his own forms, but for one thing that he needed for his personal site, he used Tally forms for this intermediate thing that he needed. And I thought, well, if he's using it, then it's got to be.
Okay, there you go. So, got a stamp from him. Good.
Yes. Yeah. So that was basically it. And what else? There were some, as I say, there were some that I didn't include on this forms apps because of the fact that, and this is, I think, might be common when I've checked them all out, but I mean, it was loading for the most simple form, which was basically your name, your email, and a message. And nothing added. And we got, just in JavaScript alone, there was 1.5 megabytes over 49 different files for that.
It was on Form app, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Their focus is on AI, which a lot of people are moving towards. So that's another off-putting thing for me personally, if they if they want to encourage you to use AI to create your forms. Now, as I'm learning, there's a lot more to building a good form, and AI is not going to do a good job on it. So those ones that head in that direction are not for me personally. But, you know, I might have suggest some of these just because of their ease. If I'm passing this on to a client and I say, that's your responsibility, this can sit on their domain, you know, we'll just put a link on your site where they can do whatever they want there and book you and pay and all that, and you're taking care of it, then that's fine. It doesn't interfere with me. And if they find one of these others a lot easier, I think probably, you know, many of these will be a lot easier than Tally, which is my favorite. So
yeah. So there's a whole load of choices there. So you feel that a piece of content in the future will be a more deep dive into the features and what have you. So you've obviously put a table together there, but deep diving in on video to how these ones fare against each other, given, I don't know, you maybe do a price comparison or you maybe do a JavaScript load comparison or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's amazing what we've got now these days for these form builders that can, you know, do payments and do all these really complex and, you know, 100 per month of submissions, as long as you can control spam,
right?
The other side of it, you know, that's the problem, I think, with a lot of them that give you 100 are like Netlify. I knew when I put our form, we were getting at least 5 spam emails a day. Well, that's over your 100 used up straight away. So if you don't control that,
Yeah, some kind of capture, like, I don't know, Cloudflare's turnstile or something like that, just in between it and the submit form. Okay. So there we go. Do you need a website to have a contact form? I don't know, but certainly they're there. They're available. They can be used. Is that it? Are we done for today, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, if you were using one of these, one little thing that I kind of discovered, which I thought was quite interesting, is say Google Forms, which I didn't mention earlier.
Forms, yeah.
It's great. You can embed it. You can't do much. It is good for accessibility. But if you wanted to embed it in your site, it downloads all of the fonts that are available in the form. So it becomes very heavy download.
Yeah.
But you can get away with that one, which I was just playing around with, because of iframes allow you to lazy load.
Oh, the core web vitals is not hit.
Yes, if it's down in the bottom of the page, or you put it in details and summary,
so it only
appears when it's clicked on, so you can overcome that page load difficulty. So
the drawback is it's downloading all the fonts. The pro of that is you don't need to load the form until you're ready to see it. Okay, so from an SEO hit, that might not be quite so bad. Still curious that it's loading all the fonts. You mean all the fonts?
All the fonts. I think all the fonts that I wish I'd brought it up on here because I did do a test on it, but it was all of the fonts that certainly were in the forms. God knows why. I told you I did question this and got AI to say, well, why on earth did they do this? And is there a workaround? And they gave a plausible thing to me with my small brain when it comes to back-end stuff about why they did this for everybody's, you know, to just so it's available to everybody. I don't know.
You would kind of imagine, though, that you only need the fonts that you need on the form that are being used on the form. But
it's ridiculous with Google, isn't it? It's the same with YouTube. We have to take all these extra precautions to stop it. You know, they're the people who have really got us to think about page load, and they're the people who make it so difficult for us to achieve it.
The hand doesn't know what the leg is doing or something like that.
Yes.
I remember. Okay, in which case I will remove the screen share and I will say thank you. So that was our first look at forms in follow-up episodes. Looks like we're going to be doing content in which we'll describe what each of the forms does and what have you. And so I guess that's it. We'll see you next time.
It is.
Oh,
you saw that.
Oh, like and subscribe, David. Let's say that one more time. If you enjoyed
please
hit the subscribe button under the YouTube video, and that enables YouTube to notify you when we produce new content, which would, you know, nice for you and nice for us.
Yeah, I think generally, you know, because we're not promoting any, we've got no commercial element to this. So, you know, to be able to keep going with this one, we need to feel that people are actually.
Yeah. I haven't told you about my new SaaS service. It's called Forms Bank or something like that. I haven't told you about that. But we'll leave that for the next episode.
I'll review it.
On that bombshell. See you next time.
Yeah, cheers.
Bye-bye.